Welcome to the Castle Therapist podcast. My name is Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean. Following our previous podcast discussing the virtues of watching Life on Mars, we decided to watch Life on Mars and talk over it whilst you hopefully watch it as well. Now, whether you've got a copy on DVD or you're watching on BritBox, that's what I'm going to be doing. We're going to be talking over it, so we'll cue you up. I usually let James do the queuing up bit because it lets him talk, and so you know that he's here and he's not just like a strange presence who doesn't utter any words. Before we commence this, however, this is going to be Life on Mars Series 1, Episode 1. It's 58 minutes and 59 seconds long. And curiously, it has a warning on BritBox which says language may offend. James, are you ready to count us in?
Yeah. Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
There we go. What I notice about this is that it's called Life on Mars, and you don't really know what it's about when it starts unless, you know, you've read up about it. But, you know, if you came to it cold, it's a cop show, isn't it? It's just like a contemporary cop show.
I should say, while we're doing this, that the way that we are recording, I sadly have my own voice coming back at me like a second later, so it does distract me a little bit.
You'll be okay.
So if I don't make sense, it's because I am quite literally not making sense to myself. But yes, I agree. I think the opening is interesting as it does set itself out as a cop show. When was this? 2006?
2006, yeah.
It's aged very well, isn't it?
It has. Or cop shows haven't really moved on very far.
True. I always noticed, especially in this first episode, and then even more so when I listen to the commentary, those little techniques they use to try and make the 70s. But I think what's also interesting in the way that they make the 70s, they then adapt a little to how they do the 2000s. So, for instance, that last shot we saw of the police station, where we get that very low angle shot where we see the steps and the building. Mm-hmm. I would suspect it's like that to mirror what we see in the 70s. So we see it's the same place. But obviously in the 70s, they can't do any other shots which are going to reveal the surroundings.
Ah.
So because they've done that in the 70s, is that the reason they've framed it like that in the 2000s?
That makes sense.
It didn't for me, because I had my own voice going into my head on a 1 second delay. I was hoping it made sense while I managed my own voice.
At this stage as well, it just doesn't feel like anything Life on Mars-y time travel is going to happen, does it? You've got interviewing a suspect, throwing the evidence at them, and then the inevitable, hang on, I've got a, what's the word? What have I got?
You've got no excuse. You've not got your voice bouncing back at you. Get your words out, Corley.
What is it? What do they call it when I've got a, here we go.
Is that it?
He's got a, what do you call it when you've got a someone's backing you up and saying you're not doing that because you were somewhere else? What is that called? I've watched so many cop shows and I don't know what it's called.
I know, the viewer knows. I can't think what it is at the moment.
We all know what it is. He's got one of those, Colin Rames, and so John Sims.
He's got a
Sam Tyler. He has to let him go.
It's not a witness.
No.
I know the word. Yeah. I've been watching Grantchester all this week, so it's been coming up a lot.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, it does.
That word, that special magic word. Yes.
It'll
I think the
to
show
us.
is quite clever in the way that it's very critical of both eras. This idea that we're seeing here, that the era of the 21st century is too bureaucratic, it lacks instinct, you're not allowed to go with your instinct if you've got it. While the 70s is obviously all about instinct, which is built upon prejudice, but allows them to work around issues which would otherwise stop them from catching legitimate criminals.
Yeah.
Alibi is what you were looking for.
It is. It came to me. I was waiting for the opportune moment to introduce it into the conversation. So thank you for saving me the job.
It's all right. Is this where Rose was? The tower blocks look familiar. Probably isn't. Oh no, because this is Manchester, isn't it? My brain's getting all Cardiff-y.
No, it's not Cardiff.
Yeah, again, quite low angle shots. And again, I'm still wondering whether that's because once you create that aesthetic, you want to keep it. Oh, well, that one isn't.
They also take the opportunity to show lots of sort of grim aging places in Manchester, don't they? Or around Greater Manchester.
Oh, there's very few of those.
they can then contrast with the 1970s before they were built or when they were brand new Manchester later on.
Yeah. They picked the perfect man for this, didn't they? Casting's excellent.
Yeah.
I was always disappointed how
Johnson
never really understood. I was going to say, well, we can choose here. We can go on about your hatred of the Junction, or we can go on to
you go on
talking about the television show. I was always disappointed how he never quite understood how important his character was. Sorry. I think he felt he was a very serious and therefore lacking, I don't know, perhaps a certain character to him that obviously has to motivate the plot along. He's reacting a lot to stuff. Just from interviews I remember reading.
Yeah.
There was this sort of feeling that he was kind of like a boring character. And I suppose when you're up against very colourful characters, you can start feeling like that. But you then lose sight of what you're actually contributing to the show. I remember Tarrant from Blake 7, Stephen Pacey, saying something similar about Tarrant and thinking, I see what you mean, but you know, the way that you play something can actually have meaning for the audience, even if you don't feel it yourself because you're too close to it. It's a great transition, this. I know I've talked over the transition as well as talked over your hatred of that Junction.
That's okay.
This is probably the most famous shot, isn't it, of the whole show? If we're on the same spot, at the same point.
I think we're about 3 seconds different, but yeah.
Round and round we go. So where would the listener be? Will he be 3 seconds ahead or 3 seconds behind?
That's a very good question.
1970s? 2005.
I'm pretty sure they're in the 1970s by now, hopefully.
I was making reference to the distance between the one and the third second being like a...
Oh, that's a good reference, actually. Cool. I wish I'd spotted that. I mean, it wouldn't be surprised to learn that none of that scenery is there anymore. But it's like they found the last best time to shoot Life on Mars in 1970s Manchester, isn't it?
The one thing I've always liked about Life on Mars over Ashes to Ashes is I think its depiction of the era is far more successful.
Yeah.
I'm not saying 1980s isn't, but I think the way they started filming Ashes to Ashes, there didn't seem to be the same sort of focus on trying to get that very visceral feeling of the era. You know, there was a lot of interior shots. When they were on the streets, they were very limited. They were at night, or you could tell they were very early morning shots of them driving on the road.
I think there's also, I mean, it's tonally different as well, not just in terms of the era, but also it's a bit more the Gene Hunt show, isn't it? Ashes to Ashes. And that's no disrespect to Keely Horse, because she's excellent and she absolutely holds her own, but there is a greater focus on Gene Hunt, and it only ends up being the Gene Hunt show, doesn't it, essentially?
I mean, to be fair to Ashes to Ashes, I mean, this first episode does a lot of work, like this whole scene of him walking down the road. You don't get to see it quite as built up as this later on. The shots normally are a little more self-contained.
Well, there's nothing like that in Ashes to Ashes, really, is there? But I suppose as well, Ashes to Ashes, it has a more, I mean, it's a more recent era and a more, I suppose, superficial era as well. So maybe it doesn't need to go into the sort of everyday of what people are doing.
That's true. I wonder if Ashes to Ashes might have been better set somewhere less built up. I wonder somewhere more rural, you know, quite interesting. London's quite a hard thing to reimagine. But so here we have the same setup shot of the police station. This was a great shot as well, the interior of this police station. And a very good move to have the Bowie track just playing out through this entire sequence. Very clever episode. And unlike Ashes to Ashes, they do get that balance right, I think, about how long you can keep Sam Tyler resisting the notion that he is somehow in this world. Where Ashes to Ashes, I think we've said before, I think they let that carry on far too long as a joke. But Gene and co are just a figment in her imagination. It's like, well, you could do that if this was the first time we'd seen this world, but this is the second time, so the audience knows that he is real in some way, and so it just becomes tiring. I should point out I have a lot of love for Ashes to Ashes, although I'm sort of railing a bit on it at the moment, but it's a very good show, very different show.
Yes, it is.
Again, good casting throughout. Well, I mean, you look like you've gone 10 rounds with Big Henry. Someone needs to take a look at you, boss. You're as white as a gingerbread's ass. Hey, there's that nice little plonk on the next floor. Well, I think the beauty of Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes, as I think we said before, and assuming you've seen these shows, which I'm sure you have, is the notion of this not being our world means that you can take these liberties and play it as a commentary on 70s television rather than it being necessarily an accurate portrayal of the 70s. This is my office. Here. This is a door. It is an amped up version of the 70s.
Terminal. Oh, I love that.
I love the introduction of Gene Hunt. What have you done with it? Keep it down, boss. Too late. It's weird how these two actors have had such an intertwined career.
Sorry, I'm a little bit glued to it at the moment. Explain intertwined career.
Surprise me. Well, I mean, they've appeared together in more than one show, as far as I can think of. Word in your shell, like pal. I think it's kind of weird when you see actors reappear working together as different characters.
There was a show they did together after this, wasn't there? Which his name escapes me. Mad Dogs.
Yes. I think they've done more than that, but I could be wrong. But it's weird for the viewer. I was watching The Eternals, the Marvel film.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the two brothers from Game of Thrones, Kit and Madden, isn't it? Appear together again. And it's, you've got those moments where you're pausing to think, like, is there going to be some sort of acknowledgement of that? Is that too juvenile?
I haven't watched it yet. I'm not big on superhero demigods, really.
Yeah, it didn't blow me away. Interesting. I'm going to say this here because I've not seen anyone notice this, but I was watching Grantchester the other day, and I know we're moving a little away from Life on Mars. Bear with me a second. Won't be a second. And Peter Davison was in it. This is one of those, like, 2016 episodes. And the book that his character's wife was reading was a fictitious book written by, authored by Nessa Sutton. Now, I thought that was like some sort of joke, N-E-S-S-A, but I don't know. Anyway, Life on Mars. Good show. Does it make you want to live in the 70s?
Well, I did live in the 70s.
As an adult?
Yeah, I suppose it does, actually. You always say, oh, things were so much simpler then. So things were simpler then, but other things were a lot more complicated, such as...
And also, it depends on what demographic you come from.
So yeah, I guess so, yeah.
That's also a factor.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, we... There is a kind of a rose-tinted view of the 70s that, you know, it's only 50% true. There were strikes. It was very difficult to get a phone installed in your house or get a new gas cooker. Thank you, Monty Python. But that was, I mean, it's a satirical sketch, but it wasn't a million miles away from the truth. Healthcare was very different. But then again, you didn't have distractions like social media and 9,000 TV channels, 7,000 radio stations.
Which, funnily enough, if you were in the 70s, would sound like a utopia.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy, isn't it? But,
I mean, as we said in the previous podcast, I mean, Life on Mars is pretty good in sort of highlighting those issues of inequalities, of prejudice, of racism, sexisms, and the likes, which were very more prevalent, maybe.
Yeah.
Or certainly more visible.
And I suppose some of those limitations that I've just described would be, depending on your demographic, your background, would be magnified as well, I guess.
Yeah. You're so right. How can you? I suppose what one could say is you can see how maybe as a policeman watching Life on Mars must seem like a time which would be a lot less frustrating, maybe. I mean, I've had family in the police, Metropolitan Police, and they've seemed very true to a lot of what's shown here. I imagine there's a lot of truth in this as much as there's a lot of embellishment and TV tropes. First episode so well lit as well, isn't it?
I think it's just a really, really good episode of anything. It's just the as you mentioned before, it does a lot of work. It does an incredible amount of work in an hour to move essentially the same story back in time. You've got the same sort of modus operandi, and there's a link with the between the two killers, and you've obviously got the lead character and he's moving his base back in time 33 years, and yet it feels like a coherent whole despite that.
It's a film, isn't it? It's a film idea rather than a book. Take away its episodicness. It's doing stuff that you'd think you'd do an hour and a half. You say you've got your standard crime show, which is normally like a good 45 minutes, 50.
Well, I mean,
And then you've also got to establish characters, time travel, link it all up.
a lot of crime shows now are mini movies, aren't they? You think of things like Midsommar Murders or Morse, or I know Morse isn't around anymore, but things that the spin-offs, the very spin-offs from Morse, Endeavour and Lewis, they're all 90-minute shows.
It's always interesting to try and get in the head of someone who would be in this space. How would you process this?
Is it a practical joke? Am I going mad? Where else do you go from there? It's got to be one of the two, hasn't it? Because you know they're going to settle on time travel, aren't you? Unless you, am I in a coma? Unless you run into someone or yourself, I guess.
I mean, it's a fascinating thing when you are aware that you were hit by a car, but you're also aware that your surroundings are so tangible, so visceral, that it's not like a dream. And I think they do a fairly good job throughout the series, not letting him lean too much into time travel. He's always very aware of the coma. Because you could never escape the fact that you do remember that you were hit by a car, which I assume he remembers. It doesn't really make any reference to it, does he?
I think
Or does he at the
he
beginning?
might do, but I don't think it labours the point. What's interesting about this, I'm just noticing the time. We're sort of 23, 22 minutes through the episode, and they're already making a breakthrough in the case. He's already lost his girlfriend, been hit by a car, woke up in 1973, and had a run-in with the chief inspector, detective inspector, whatever. The point is, there's a lot's already happened in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel rushed.
No, not at all. I'm not quite sure how it manages it so well. I was 4 in 1973, Annie. Because each scene, I suppose, is very much aware that it's having to progress the two plots. Like here, where you have Annie and you have Sam, but you've also got to have the movement of the actual story. So you've got that question of, is he there? Where is he? Which he's obviously thinking about and the audience is thinking about. But you're also having to try and keep pushing along this storyline, which the audience is probably less interested about.
Yeah. There's also a fantastic lack of not just the 1973 stuff and the time travel, but just the whole exposition is entirely non-expositional. It's entirely through the dialogue and it's natural. So he doesn't have to say to her, "I've traveled through time." He just says, "I was 4 in 1973. And that just reminds us everything that's happened and his reaction to it without going into pointless, arguably boring detail.
Well, it's that problem, isn't it? Like we've just been saying, and you're saying that the 20 minutes has gone by, and you can't allow either of those elements to suffocate the other. You can't allow the audience to have too much of the indulgence of him over focusing on his move through time, when you've also got this other storyline which you want to get the audience involved in, because it'll ultimately set up the series and the dynamics. I mean, I think I recall the commentary saying an earlier draft had it with Sam not really finding his space till even a little later, and they realised they've got to get to a point where he is on board, and you know, he is there and he's going to deal with the case. Because invariably, like they did with Ashes to Ashes, you could have him defying and resisting his world for a long time, but you've got to have that point where you pull that card and go, no, he's got to accept it, because the audience are going to get frustrated. I love his flat.
The lampshade he has on his bed, we had wallpaper like that when I was a wee boy in the 1970s.
There's a few shots of the flat you don't tend to get in many of the other episodes, like the one of the wall with the sink and the toilet.
Mm. I think you only see him cooking the once or twice, don't you? There's the episode with the girl who he is protecting, and he cooks for her. I remember that, but I think the majority of the episodes you don't see the kitchen area at all.
You don't really. You see bits like the mirror when he's shaving, but you don't get many shots where you see the other side of the room. Fully complete flat. Who strangled Susie Tripper yesterday. Which is a shame, because a lot of work's gone into that flat.
Yeah.
And it does end up tending to be either the bed or the television. It's the same killer in both times. Paranoid illusion brought about by the accident. It's not concussion. It's psychological. Pretty fancy words for a WPC. I studied psychology at university. It's interesting how the 70s has never really managed to capture the interest of younger generations, and I wonder if that's something to do with Hollywood, where you don't get that sort of big boost and the sort of new Hollywood era until you start seeing sort of the success with Spielberg and the like, and a sort of change to how, you know, the creation of the blockbuster. And maybe that sort of draws, gives a better draw into the 80s. Because both eras are quite dark. You know, the 70s is obviously, as you say, known for its strikes. And certainly in the UK, issues with money. There's a lot of problems there. But the 80s had them as well. But the 80s seems to carry a sort of a more of a upbeat vibrancy. I mean, yeah. I suppose there was a bit of a flush in money, and you sort of had the yuppie generation. The 70s is this interesting period of being a sort of slight growth in technology, but it's still pretty raw.
Yes.
And simplistic. And I think in a sense that's kind of exciting.
It is.
Retrospectively.
I found an old game console the other weekend from the late 70s. And it's just a Pong thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I did a bit of research into it. The chip that's in it, this is very boring, I know, but the chip that's in it was in maybe a dozen, two dozen different game consoles, all of the same sort of, you twist a knob and then you shoot a light gun or you fiddle with a paddle to go back and forth, up and down. And, you know, that's, I mean, it's just that technology now, you wouldn't put anywhere near gaming at all. It's because it is a mix of, actually, you probably would put it near gaming because it's a mix of digital and analog. But the point is, it's a very, very basic implementation of gaming. And what we have now, in terms of the technology, is completely different. And yet, these things were cutting edge at the time. And runs on six AA batteries.
Those are Pong games, which, as you say, were sort of a very simple directional movement and an activator. Yeah, I mean, I was playing, you know, play No Man's Sky. And you know, ultimately, you're doing quite repetitive tasks, which are A to B, activate, A to B, activate. It's still the same sort of evolution.
Basically the same gameplay.
Absolutely. You wouldn't be able to tell the difference, really. You squint a bit, maybe.
That's a great line, I'm in Booper.
Yes. No, please. I'm here.
Don't leave me here. I remember watching this episode and wondering why they'd changed the test card girl, not guessing that they were going to bring the test card girl to life later on.
Did you ever read any of the books?
No, I remember. I didn't even know about them until you told me about them.
Yeah, they're quite interesting. They deal a lot with a test card girl.
Oh.
It'll be very interesting to see how the Lazarus will shift the goalposts again, because I'm sure it will. Bloody hell, I've seen road accidents more cheerful. Where are you today? Here, old planet of the clangers. Yeah, there'd be lots of speculation of whether the test card girl is any different to the clown in Ashes to Ashes, or Keats isn't in Ashes to Ashes. He's the sinister, and the one at the end of this as well, very similar.
Yeah,
the manifestations are the same, and that sort of stuff sort of comes from retrospective watching, I think, rather than when you're writing. And I wonder when they do Lazarus with a big decade between. There'd be some sort of retrospective connecting of dots which perhaps weren't intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they'll just go on a totally different tangent. I love the outfits as well. I know you. From the picket line. You put the boot into my old man. Oh, happy days. Can't love. This is my esteemed colleague, the I. Tyler. It's just odd because the 70s is a forgotten era, isn't it? I mean, the 60s obviously is obviously got this the hippie movement. I mean, people would say, oh, you got Vietnam, but you got Vietnam moving into the 70s as well.
Yeah.
It's always situated as a 60s thing. The 70s kind of misses out anything to really define it.
Flared trousers? Sideburns?
Yeah. But then flared trousers, there were some of those in the 60s and carrying into the 80s. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just sort of saying, you know, a major global conflict and a movement of social peace juxtaposed to 70s bell bottoms. I'm just saying that there might be a like disproportionate signification, social political signification for the two eras.
It is odd. The colour TV. I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel now.
But I think even colour TV, people think of the 80s, don't they? They don't.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, my gran didn't have a colour TV till the 90s. Didn't have a telephone until the 90s either.
Well, I mean, colour TV in the States was more 60s.
Yeah.
So again, it depends on which country you're in.
Where I come from, you'd be looking at suspension. Really? What, for making a breakthrough?
At 11:20, she saw Susie Tripper heading away from the pub. Ooh, the old half-pint glasses. Yeah, Chris told me what happened in the mortuary. I need a drink. That's the first sensible thing you said since you got here.
I'm trying to think of the last time I saw a half-pint glass like that.
Well, that style went out the window a long time ago.
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure I've been somewhere where I've seen them. Which part of my subconscious
Nelson's a good bloke. What are your boys in Tan and Bitter, Sam?
I don't know why it disappeared. I assumed it was because if you get hit on the head by one of those glasses.
You might be right.
Thick material, weren't they?
Give it up, then. Maybe I've only seen them in a display capacity.
All right. The man you're looking for is either wearing thick gloves of some sort, or he's using
a
bag or something made out of coarse material that gets under the nails.
It's funny, the pubs were like this. What is it, to the 2000s? It was actually really early when, when the smoking in pubs disappeared in the UK.
About 20 years ago.
I always imagine it was like early 90s, but it was actually far later.
Yeah, I don't regularly go to pubs now at all, but when I was regularly going to pubs, there was no outdoor smoking, it was still indoors.
Because pubs always had the yellow walls.
Yeah.
Something big crammed up your jacksie, but don't worry, you'll learn.
I mean, there was a pub not dissimilar to this in my town up until they knocked it down and then moved it, if you can imagine such a thing, about 25 years ago, and it wasn't very different to this pub at all. Decor and layout.
Oh yeah, I remember being at college in a similar pub like that. We used to go down the road. Me and mate Dave would always get John Smith Yorkshire Bitter.
Smooth flow or magnet?
I don't know. It's beer.
So where did you get these names from?
Call it inspiration. Predict what this killer might do next. We have to understand what he's thinking and feeling. Annie, you're familiar with this case, aren't you?
Yeah, so you get to the back half of this, back third, and we do start to properly move into the actual story. I suppose, what is the story? I'm not even sure you'd say the I arc or B arc is in this, because they are pretty much running alongside.
Because he needed to see a mouth, lips. We have to see the things that we value.
Put yourselves in the mind of this man. You're lonely. Every night you dream of this girl and she's big eyes and red ruby lips. So you go out and you find that girl and you bring her home. But you don't gag her because you want to see those ruby lips. But you just can't bring yourself to kiss them.
You get embarrassed. Angry. You'd start to blame the girl. It's her fault. She's taunting him just by being there.
And then one day you just snap. Strangler, using bootlace, and then the cycle starts all over again with a different girl. And this time, you're positive you're going to be brave enough to kiss her.
Only you won't be.
I look at your lips all the time, Cartwright. Do you think I should turn myself in?
I think you better trot along now, sweetheart, before I have to hose this lot down.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
How would you keep her quiet without gagging her? All right, maybe this nut moved to the area recently. Maybe he's on day release from the loony bin. Maybe there's a new face in the local boozers. Let's find out. Let's not wait for another skirt to wind up dead. And let's just hope we haven't been led up a blind alley.
Good casting, Liz White, I think.
Sorry, sir, I've checked, and there's no Maya Roy listed in that area.
Then try the number again.
I have no Maya Roy listed.
Well, just try again.
It's been in loads and loads of things.
Drink
fix things. What am I saying? I run a pub. Of course it'll fix things.
I'm lost, Nelson. Really lost.
You're not lost, pal. You're where you are. And you have to make the best of it. It's all you can do. Keep it to yourself, eh? Folks just seem happier with you than Nelson.
I suppose after the final episode of Ashes to Ashes, you have to wonder what Nelson actually is, don't you?
Look at this. These are my notes from the real world. Made them last night. Films, music, wars. Just check out the detail.
Don't tell me. Atom bombs over Moscow.
Discussing psychology with your little friend. I want Chris out of the collators, then. It's a waste of flipping time. No, it isn't. Sorry, did that sound like a question? I can find this killer. Do you know what? I think you're trying to show me up. You don't scare me, Hunt. It's an interesting point you raise. Allow me to retort.
Another wonderful scene of the streets of 1970s Manchester, which I really enjoy watching. This sort of segment of the show. It's a wonderful swing round. That last yes. camera shot there. It's I really like this bit.
And he fell off a pier and he couldn't remember the name of things.
Good mixture of little bits of CG to help him do that.
And you know what? He stopped believing in them.
I recall him saying that there had to be a few little changes to make it work.
And everything seemed real again.
But again, you don't get as many shots like this.
No.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Oh, what will you find? Mist? A big cliff? White door?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's far easier to do these inner spaces.
You don't really see record shops these days, do you?
I used to come here.
I suppose not many people buy records. It's a specialist thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's one near me. I'm not sure if it's reopened since the pandemic. I mean, the only time I've been near it was on a Wednesday afternoon, and I suspect they may have been in a half-day closing sort of a place. Although, of course, HMV sell vinyl, again, for ridiculous prices. But I suppose that's based on how many actually get produced. Plus the tangible nostalgia tax, the markup that they put on it.
Oh, maybe there'll be a growth in them again. You know, is the commercial stream market truly viable? Would they increase? Will physical media start to increase again?
Mm.
You know, with the the greater partitioning of content. Is that going to lead to people having to just buy copies of stuff? I don't know. See, ITV have got their ITVX coming out, which will again wall certain content.
Oh, really? I didn't know about that.
I know where the fibers come from. Soundproof. So that, and you've got Paramount Plus doing the same. Disney moving the Netflix stuff over. I don't know whether Netflix will still hold the Daredevil Marvel stuff. Star Trek all moving from Netflix to Paramount Plus. It'll just be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah.
Especially in the UK where costs are rising. People more likely are going to have one stream, they're going to pick one. Or maybe they'll just jump between all of them and all of them will lose profits. Or, you know, month on Netflix, month on BritBox.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of it, isn't there? And at some point, you need to, I guess, make a decision which ones you're going to stick with. But
yeah,
I suppose, I mean, in my situation where I've got three children, it's very difficult to get to that stage. We're not having this, we're not having this, we're not having this, because there's benefits for the children in all of them, really. I mean, I don't watch an awful lot of telly myself, but what we do watch together is mostly either on BritBox or iPlayer.
Yeah, some good scenes here. I mean, there's the first proper comedy scene with Gene Hunt we just had. Mrs. Rames? Beryl Rames. You gave the name Colin Rames, so I thought there was a connection. Yeah, she's his grandmother. And the following scene is again pretty much the point where we see the prose of the 70s over the process of the 2005 representative between Tyler's approach and Gene Hunt's approach. Complain about a neighbour. That's why we have a statement from you on file. The only trouble is, we don't know who it was or what it was about because our copy got smudged. You got Garibaldi's? Chris Garibaldi's. Well, 23 months ago, Mrs. Rames. Think back, please. So it's an interesting dilemma, isn't it? It's the whole thing of, do you let people run by instinct? Exactly. Fast and loud, was it a next door neighbor who and thus may be able to catch people who could otherwise hide? However, you end up catching the wrong people, you have no oversight over how people are doing their job. I love pink wafers, you know, I love those packets of wafers you get at Christmas. Oh, they are lovely, expensive, man. They are, aren't they? I sometimes get them in for my grandson. Takes a bite out of the housekeeper there. Chris, run down canteen, see if we've got any pink wafers. No, Gov.
Hang on, sorry, is this helping to hold the cuppa?
Grand. Yeah.
Hey, don't you go worrying yourself about this.
And we also come, we're leading up to this very fun moment. A very fun moment. That's number
20. Oh, yeah.
The famous jumping over the desk. Playing his record player all night. Bash, crash, bam. And it's not even local. So that's why you came to see us, to complain about the noise from this. I do miss the 70s, like cars, 70s and 80s cars.
I did consider many years ago buying a, there they go, buying a Jaguar of the type driven in by Ian Ogilvy in Return of the Saints. I came quite close. It was around £1,200. It was beautiful condition on the outside, but and the insides were okay, but it didn't go too well, which could have been resolved. But the main problem with it just misses the comforts of a modern car. You have this very stripped back driving experience. You don't have any power steering for a start off. You don't have intelligent braking or any of that stuff. So you kind of need to be experienced in driving those sorts of old cars, and probably a Jaguar XJS isn't the model to be learning to drive a car without power steering and intelligent braking and all that sort of stuff.
Dora? Dora? That's what you had. Dora. Sora. Well, if you please come to be my love.
It's okay, love, we've got you. We've got you. It's okay. It's okay.
When I was a kid, we had a VW Beetle, white VW Beetle, fake leather seats. Sorry, you were saying?
I was just going to say that this end kind of shows how the show really had no idea really where it was going at this point, whether it was time travel or in his head. Obviously, the whole series leans towards being in his head for Mars. There are moments in this which would suggest there is time travel going on.
Yeah, certainly throughout the first series, I think. When you factor in the stuff with his parents.
That's Rame's house. Maya was right. And the second series, which has the Mark Warren episode, doesn't it?
Yes, of course.
It's one of my favourites. Where he's being tortured in the future.
Yeah. That's a funny episode because I remember not liking that episode when it went out. And when we rewatched it a few weeks ago, I absolutely loved it.
I always think John Sims does distress very well. And in that episode, and I think the one following, where he sort of has all sorts of problems, that's when his character's the most fun. When he's struggling.
Yeah.
He's going blind or he's in pain.
Kramer will never go to trial, you know that, don't you? He's certifiable. Nah. Sure you'll send that creature down forever.
And there is a suggestion in that episode that what he does has an impact on the future, as I recall.
Yes. Yes.
Says he is seriously disturbed.
Well, certainly seems to.
I mean, it's a whole area of the show which was ignored, quite rightly, because I think it does get in the way of what the show ultimately is, and it's a cop show. But it does make for fascinating introspection. Is this connecting to the real world? Is it connecting to another pretend real world? Is it just all a game?
That's why he doesn't kill for so long. We put him away in hospital, he gets out in 30 years, and then he kills. And then he kidnaps Maya. What are you on about?
Like I say, there's some people who see this as being a concoction of Gene Hunt, his Geneverse. I disagree with that.
The law is putting bad people away, and you want to show a court that note?
I think he's just a very powerful character which has dominated a neutral plane.
Mm.
But again, like you say, for it to have time to go through all this sort of nuance of the relationship between the outcome of the case to his future, on top of everything else, and to use that to help cement the character into the time zone and align the characters. I mean, I think the only worrying thing this life on Mars is it kind of suggests at the end that Sam prefers this sort of world. And I think that in itself is interesting. Because Sam can enjoy it because Sam is aware that his influence in there can help better those cops who are in that world, and a place where he can enjoy having more of a free roam of his own and of his own instincts. But ultimately, you are validating the world where, yeah, you can sort of perhaps shape one Gene Hunt, but there's lots of other cops like Gene Hunt there who are doing terrible things, and you are now part of that system.
That's one way of looking at it, yeah, I guess.
I don't know, it's just... I think sometimes there's a little bit of romanticism in the show, which dismisses, very much totally dismisses the 2000s bar Sam Tyler, who is kind of a hybrid. He exists within that system but resists the system, which is largely what Life on Mars is about. It's romanticism for the 70s, where all those paperwork procedural issues were not a problem, were not there. But ultimately, someone like Sam Tyler also knows why they're there. It always amazes me, this episode, how it has time for this extra section.
Yeah.
It feels like you've done so much within the hour and it's still going.
You only need to take that definitive step. Do as I tell you, and you will be waking up with your family.
And it's interesting how this first episode ends in a way very similar to how the last episode, Life on Mars, ends.
Yes.
Maya is here.
This is a bold shot as well, given you've got to be very careful what you're getting in the frame.
I'm coming back. You tell her. I'm coming back.
My brain at the moment is thinking, I have suspicion that this isn't the first take that him and Liz has done up here. Because Liz's hair at this point has none of her styling through this episode. As if it's been totally blown away by being stuck on this roof. Assuming actually they are on the roof when they're doing these shots are actually quite close. While his is on the roof.
There's nothing in those notes about a mobile phone.
What?
This is just my mind trying to keep me here.
He's just playing games here. Just look down.
I've always liked Liz White's character in this. Because she manages to have a sort of strength, but a sort of kindness to the character as well.
Yeah.
Don't do it, Sam! No! Don't do it!
Which I could imagine as an actress might be a little boring. But I think certainly as an audience.
What are you doing?
We all feel like jumping.
I mean, you can't doubt that the most fun to play in here is virtually all the other main cast. The Sam and Liz are the dullest characters to play, I suspect.
Maybe you're here for a reason. To make a difference.
I mean, I imagine Ray's a lot of fun to play.
Oh, yeah. Pretty sure that's set in Manchester. There's not many people from Manchester in it. John Sims from Leeds, Liz White's from Rotherham, Dean Andrews, who plays Ray, is from Rotherham, and Phil Glenster's from Surrey.
Band. I was running up here and I fell against the fire bucket.
Yeah. Oh, near enough.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness, Rotherham isn't far from Manchester. I mean, obviously, there's a very important border to cross, but...
There we go.
What should I do, honey?
It's... This episode mixes time travel, setting up a series, solving a murder with quite useful sort of with good detective work, and then it has this whole sort of existential crisis of Sam Tyler bundled into it as well, and it does it all in 1 hour.
Yeah,
it's incredible, isn't it, really? And then again, it has that excellent soundtrack as well bundled into it.
Yeah. It's a really difficult concept, and it's just done so very, very well.
Now, we know it was in development for some time, so probably a lot of that, what we just sort of Express there comes into the in-depth knowledge of knowing the show that you're writing very well from having rewritten it several times. I'm just going to pop into our Facebook page because I know we talked about this a couple of shows ago that we were going to do this, and we were a little bit uncertain, weren't we, as to whether to proceed with doing a commentary with a Life on Mars episode. I was very pleased to see some comments from Nick Caulfield, who said he'd never seen Life on Mars, so he didn't know whether to listen to the episode or whether to watch Life on Mars later on.
We kind of spoilt it if he does listen to it.
Yeah, definitely. I guess so. So apologies there. He received encouragement from James Ward. And Jonathan Appleton bought Series 1 from Oxfam, who had no less than 3 copies in stock, and he's looking forward to revisiting it now. So hopefully he's holding off for this podcast revisit it. Fingers crossed.
Once again, I hope the stuff on Ashes to Ashes wasn't too explicit to some of the revelations of the series. If
hopefully
you've not.
Seen
it.
I mean, it is. They are both old shows, so hopefully it's not too...
Well, this is it, isn't it? I mean, it's an old show. We're talking a decade from when the whole thing finished.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a something comparable. It's sort of like spoiling Destiny of the Daleks in the mid-90s, isn't it, I suppose, in some ways.
True.
And if you frame it that way, then you probably think, we're probably going to let them off now. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this, in which we have sat and talked over the first episode of Life on Mars. So hopefully you've enjoyed it. And if you haven't, you should probably tell us and we won't do it again. We'll be back for another show soon. Until then, it's goodbye. Thank you.